Okay, so this week we're diving into a pretty fascinating case, and you know me, I love these kind of cases that really dig into the nitty-gritty of how our legal system works.
Absolutely. Always fun to peel back the layers and see what's going on under the hood, right?
Exactly. And this one is particularly interesting because it touches on some really fundamental constitutional issues, specifically dealing with something called affirmative defenses.
Ah, yes, affirmative defenses, a cornerstone of criminal law, for sure.
For sure, but it can get complicated really fast.
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of nuances. In this case, People v. Patterson, it's from 1976 out in New York. It really brings a lot of those nuances to the forefront, especially when you're talking about murder trials.
Right, and I think that's what makes it so relevant for our listeners. You know, a lot of folks might hear affirmative defense and think, okay, that's legalese, not for me.
Right, but it's actually super important because it gets at the heart of how we balance the rights of the accused with the need for justice.
Exactly. And in this case, Patterson, we're really zeroing in on the question of whether forcing a defendant to prove they were experiencing something called extreme emotional disturbance, or EED.
ED, yeah, that's a big one, especially in these types of cases.
For sure. So the big question is, does making the defendant prove that? Does that actually violate their constitutional rights, specifically their right to due process? That's what we're going to unpack today.
And to set the stage, it's important to remember that Patterson actually put forward two main arguments at his trial, kind of like two separate lines of defense.
Right. He basically said, look, either the gun went off accidentally.
Which would be a completely different legal scenario, of course.
Totally. Or he said, I was acting under the influence of this extreme emotional disturbance.
And that's where things get really tricky.
Totally. And just to give our listeners the outcome up front, the jury didn't buy the accidental discharge argument, but the ED issue, that's what ended up going all the way to the New York Court of Appeals.
Precisely. So that's the path we're going to follow today.
Right, so let's break it down, starting with the basics, the facts of the case.
Okay, so we're dealing with a marriage that, at least based on the sources you provided, was not exactly a picture of domestic bliss.
Yeah, the word volatile comes to mind.
Very much so. Frequent arguments, even some physical altercations, not a healthy situation by any stretch.
And eventually, Roberta, that's the wife, she files for divorce.
Which you can imagine probably added even more fuel to the fire.
Absolutely. And to make things even more complicated, she starts seeing an old flame, her ex-fiancé, a guy named John Northrup,
Right, and this all kind of culminates on December 27th, 1970.
which is when things take a really tragic turn.
Absolutely. So on that day, Patterson goes to his father-in-law's house and he's carrying a rifle.
Yeah, that's never a good sign.
No, not at all. And when he gets there, he finds Roberta with John Northrup.
And, well, violence erupts.
Sadly, yes, Patterson shoots Northrup twice in the head, killing him.
It's a really grim scene.
It is. And it's important to note that Patterson did confess to the shooting.
And they were able to use that confession in court, right?
Exactly. The court ruled that it was given voluntarily, so it was admissible as evidence. And to add to that, Roberta witnessed the whole thing, so her testimony corroborated what happened.
So they had a pretty solid case against him.
They did, but remember, that's where those two defense strategies come in, the accidental shooting and, of course, the EED defense.
Which the jury didn't buy the accident claim, but the ED, that's where the really interesting legal arguments come into play.
Exactly, because now we're getting into constitutional territory.
Right. So the core question before the New York Court of Appeals, it all boils down to this. Did making Patterson prove his ED defense violate due process? And the court's answer, to cut to the chase, was no.
And that no is where things get really interesting because it forces us to look at another landmark case, Mulaney v. Wilbur, from just the year before, 1975.
Right. And for those of you keeping score at home, Mulaney was a Supreme Court case, so it sets a precedent that all lower courts have to follow.
Precisely. So in Mulaney, the Supreme Court said that a Maine law, which basically made a murder defendant prove they acted in the heat of passion to get their charge reduced to manslaughter, that law was unconstitutional.
And they said that because it shifted the burden of proof onto the defendant for something that the prosecution should have to prove.
Exactly. And that's where the distinction between Mulaney and Patterson becomes crucial,
Right.
because the New York Court of Appeals was very careful to say, look, this isn't the same thing.
Right. They emphasize that in New York, the prosecution still has to prove every single element of the crime of murder, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Including, crucially, that the defendant acted with intent, which is a cornerstone of a murder charge.
Exactly. And this is where it gets a little nuanced, but it's really important to grasp this, the EE defense in New York. It doesn't actually wipe away that element of intent.
It doesn't say, oh, they didn't mean to kill at all. It's more like, yes, they intended to kill, but...
But they were driven to it by this extreme emotional disturbance, which, legally speaking, makes them less culpable, less blameworthy in the eyes of the law.
And that's a really key distinction because it goes to the heart of what Eid is all about.
It's about recognizing that sometimes people's actions, even terrible actions like taking a life, can be understood in the context of their mental and emotional state.
And that's where the New York Court of Appeals drew a line in the sand. They said, look, it's constitutionally okay to require defendants to prove affirmative defenses like Eid by a preponderance of the evidence.
And just as a quick reminder for our listeners, preponderance of the evidence, that basically means more likely than not. It's a lower standard of proof than beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what the prosecution always has to meet.
Right. So it's a balancing act. The prosecution still has the higher burden overall, but the defendant has to show that it's more likely than not that this Eid defense applies to their case.
And it's also important to note that the Eid defense in New York, it's more flexible than the old heat of passion idea.
Oh, absolutely. Heat of passion usually required something to happen right before the crime, like some immediate provocation.
Right, like someone insults you, you get enraged, and boom, you act in the heat of that moment.
But Eid, it recognizes that emotional distress can build up over time. It can simmer beneath the surface.
Right, so it's not just about a sudden outburst. It can encompass a longer period of emotional turmoil that ultimately leads to the act.
And that's a really significant difference when you're talking about the law recognizing the complexities of human behavior.
Absolutely. And of course, no Supreme Court case or really any high-profile legal case is without its disagreements.
Oh, yeah. There are always different perspectives, different interpretations, and Patterson is no exception.
Right. So let's dig into some of the dissenting and concurring opinions because they offer some really important insights into the legal thinking at play here.
Okay. So Justice Cook, he wrote a pretty powerful dissent. And his main point was that in practice, New York's extreme emotional disturbance defense, it was basically the same thing as heat of passion.
Which, if that were true, then the Mulaney decision would apply and the prosecution would have to disprove Eid.
Exactly. That was his argument. But the majority of the court, they pushed back on that pretty hard.
Right. They said, hold on, Eid in New York, it's broader than just heat of passion. It's not just about a sudden reactive outburst.
They emphasize that it can include this whole buildup of emotional distress, kind of simmering tension that reaches a boiling point.
So it's not just about what happened right before the act. It's about the whole context of the defendant's emotional state leading up to it.
Precisely. And that's a really important legal distinction.
It is. And it shows how even within the highest courts, you can have these fundamental disagreements about how to interpret legal concepts.
For sure. And we also had some interesting concurring opinions in this case. Chief Judge Breidel, he wrote separately to highlight the value of affirmative defenses in our system.
Right. He's basically saying, look, affirmative defenses are a good thing because they allow for nuance in our judgments of guilt.
Exactly. They let us say, okay, maybe all the elements of the crime are technically there, but there are these mitigating circumstances that need to be considered.
So it's not just a black and white guilty or not guilty situation. It's about recognizing the shades of gray in human behavior.
And that's a really important aspect of criminal law. It's about achieving justice, not just blindly applying the letter of the law.
Absolutely. And Judge Jones, in his concurrence, he focused on a different but equally important principle, judicial restraint.
Which is all about courts deferring to the legislature whenever possible.
Right. The idea is that judges shouldn't be too quick to overturn laws that have been passed by elected representatives.
And in this case, Judge Jones was basically saying, look, the legislature in New York made a choice about how to structure their Eid defense. And unless the Supreme Court explicitly says it's unconstitutional, we should respect that choice.
So it's a delicate balance between the courts ensuring that laws are constitutional and respecting the role of the legislature in making those laws.
And that's a tension that runs throughout our legal system.
Totally. And there's one more piece of the Patterson decision that I think is worth highlighting. It's a procedural point, but it's super important.
Oh, yeah. This one's big, especially for anyone studying for the bar exam. The majority opinion in Patterson talked about what are called errors affecting the mode of proceedings.
Now, that sounds pretty technical, so let's break it down.
Sure. Basically, what they're talking about are errors that happen during the trial itself. Things like a judge giving incorrect instructions to the jury, especially instructions about who have the burden of proof.
Which can obviously have a huge impact on the outcome of the case.
Oh yeah, it could totally skew things. And what the court in Patterson emphasized was that these kinds of errors, they can't be waived by the defendant, even if their lawyer didn't object at the time.
So even if the defense attorney misses it, the appeals court has to look at it.
Exactly. It's their duty to ensure that the trial was fundamentally fair. And that includes making sure the jury was properly instructed on the law.
So that's a pretty big takeaway from Patterson. These motive proceedings, errors, they're serious business.
They are. And it just goes to show how important every step of the legal process is, from the trial itself all the way up through the appeals.
Absolutely. So let's zoom out for a second and bring this all together. What are the key things our listeners should take away from this deep dive into People v. Patterson?
Okay, so first and foremost, Patterson really clarifies the boundaries of how states can handle affirmative defenses without violating due process.
Right. It basically says, states, you can require defendants to prove mitigating circumstances, but you can't shift the burden of proof for the actual elements of the crime onto them.
Precisely. And that's a crucial distinction. And another big takeaway is that while the prosecution always has that high burden of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, defendants also have a responsibility.
They have to show that their affirmative defense, in this case, ED, is more likely than not to be true.
And if they can't do that, then they might not get the benefit of that defense, even if it seems plausible.
And it's interesting to think back to Patterson's other defense, the accidental shooting claim. The fact that that was rejected outright while the ED issue went all the way to the Court of Appeals, it shows how different defenses can play out in a case.
It really highlights the strategic choices that defense attorneys have to make and how those choices can have really different legal consequences.
Absolutely. And for anyone who's interested in law, I think Patterson is a great case study for understanding how courts interpret statutes, how due process plays out in criminal cases, and how arguments are made at the appellate level.
It's a case that touches on so many important aspects of our legal system, and it really forces you to think critically about the balance between individual rights and the pursuit of justice.
Couldn't agree more. And one final takeaway, and this is something I think is really worth pondering, is the distinction between extreme emotional disturbance and the older heat of passion idea.
Right. The ED, it acknowledges that emotional turmoil can be a long-term thing. It's not always about a sudden, explosive reaction.
Which is a much more nuanced view of human behavior. And it raises the question, how do we fairly assess ED in a legal context?
Especially when you consider that proving emotional disturbance is inherently subjective. It relies on the defendant's own testimony, expert witnesses, and other evidence that can be difficult to quantify.
So it's a really complex issue, and Patterson doesn't necessarily offer all the answers, but it definitely sparks a conversation about how we balance the rights of the accused with the need to hold people accountable for their actions.
And how we ensure that our legal system is truly fair and just for everyone involved.
So, to sum up our deep dive into People v. Patterson, the New York Court of Appeals ultimately decided that it was okay for the state to make a defendant prove they were experiencing ED to get a murder charge reduced to manslaughter.
And that decision hinged on the fact that ED, as defined in New York law, doesn't negate the basic elements of the crime of murder, which the prosecution still has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
And that brings us to a final thought for our listeners to chew on. Given that extreme emotional disturbance is such a subjective thing, how does placing the burden of proof on the defendant affect different people differently?
Right. Does it create an uneven playing field where some defendants might have an easier time proving ED than others?
And how does that affect our understanding of fairness and justice in the legal process? These are big questions, and they're questions that Patterson continues to raise even today.
And it's through cases like this, cases that grapple with these really fundamental issues, that we can continue to learn and evolve our understanding of the law and how it impacts real people's lives.
Absolutely. Well, that's our deep dive into People v. Patterson for this week. Hopefully this has given everyone some food for thought.
And sparked some good discussion, because that's what it's all about.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
And keep exploring those fascinating corners of the law.
See you then.
Take care.